Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello and welcome to the Karma You podcast. This is your host, Chloe Brotheridge. Welcome. Thanks so much for listening today. I am a coach. I'm a hypnotherapist. I'm the author of The Anxiety Solution. And this week I'm talking to Toni Jones, who is an amazing journalist. And she's the founder of the Shelf Help Book Club. That is Shelf Help, not self-help. She also reviews a self-help book every month for the Evening Standard newspaper. Now, I love what Toni is doing to build this amazing community of people who are interested in the common goal of bettering themselves and becoming happier human beings. I love the community that Toni is creating. Definitely check out her Facebook group, the Shelf Help Book Club. And she runs events where people get together, like a traditional book club, and talk about a self-help book and share ideas and share their stories and share the insights that they're getting from it. And I myself am a big fan of self-help books. I have found over the years that self-help books have helped me massively. And I've also found that I get a lot of messages from people about my book, The Anxiety Solution. So I know that this stuff works, even though self-help kind of has a bad reputation, but it's kind of coming back full circle. It's becoming cool and relevant again, which I love. So I chat to Toni about why there's such an interest these days in self-help. We talk about the benefits of joining a book club, and she talks us through her favorite self-help books. And this is really, really helpful. If you're looking for some recommendations, Toni really knows her stuff, and you definitely want to be checking out the books that she recommends. She also shares the big life changes that she has made personally when it comes to things she's learned from self-help books. And she's done a lot of things. She's made a lot of changes. It's quite amazing. So before we get into the episode, just want to let you know my online program, Your Karma Self, my online program for anxiety, opens its doors today, which is Monday, the 4th of March, 2019. And it closes again on the 10th of March. So you've got a week if you want to join. If you're listening to this episode later than those dates, then the course will open again in another 6 months. You can head to karmayou.com/program to find out all the details of what I'm covering in the program. There are live calls. There are amazing tools to help you to manage your anxiety. There's a supportive community. And it really does give you everything you need to improve your mental well-being and become that calm and confident person that definitely is inside of you. So I hope you enjoy this episode with Toni Jones. Welcome, Toni. Thanks so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. I appreciate being here. It's my first podcast actually ever.
Amazing.
Because I've said no to ones before, because being a journalist for a long time, I think I spend a lot of my time on the other side of the conversation. So I'm usually more comfortable asking the questions and answering them. But I love you. I love what you're doing. And I think we're trying to kind of spread a similar kind of message. So I'm really happy to be here and hope you'll be gentle with me.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I feel very privileged to be your first podcast. can you just tell us what it is that you do and what has been your journey to being where you are today?
Okay. So my name's Toni Jones, and I do quite a few different things at the moment, actually. My most recent full-time job is I'm a journalist by trade. At the moment, I'm a freelance journalist, and I also organise photo shoots. They're my kind of day jobs. But the thing that I'm most passionate about, and what I think I'm here to talk to you about today, is my book club and community, which is called Shelf Help. And that's all about self-help and self-development and kind of connecting people with books and experts and ideas that make themselves, like, look at themselves in a different way, maybe a more positive way, and then also connecting those people with each other. So we run the book clubs online, and then also offline we have meetups and author events. And so kind of bringing people together, really, and celebrating self-help, trying to demystify it a bit, because I think it's brilliant and it's so broad. There's kind of like there's so much to cover, whether that's kind of like changing your habits or changing how you feel about your place on the planet. So that's what I'm spending most of my time doing at the moment, actually, and it's really taken off. It kind of started about a year ago, and we're already celebrating quite a few thousand members kind of globally, thanks to the magic of social media. So that's kind of what I'm doing now, really.
Amazing. It really has taken off, the number of events and your international and all that sort of thing. It's quite amazing. So can you tell us a bit more about your history then? So what led you? Why self-help? Why is that important to you?
Yeah, well, so probably because I just needed a lot of help.
Don't we all?
I think I spent a long time, like most of my life actually, probably kind of trying to avoid feelings or trying to not feel things. It probably comes from a childhood of, like, you know, I'm from a really big, quite complicated family. My dad was married 4 times before he died, and my mum's been married 3 times now to, like, a really great guy that she's been with for 20 years. But I'm now one of 10 brothers and sisters. So I think with that comes, you know, most of whom I get on really well with now, some of whom I don't see. But I think with that, when you're younger, comes quite a lot of, you know, kind of family dynamics and complications. My dad was a big drinker. So when him and my mum split, it was kind of me, my mum, and my brothers and sisters. So I think I've always taken on a lot of responsibility at an early age, and felt very much like nobody really was interested in what I had to say. So the way to deal with that was just either not say anything or just kind of stuff down. And then I suppose my kind of journey through life, choosing the jobs I had as a journalist. I worked for The Sun for 10 years, and then I worked for the Mail Online for a couple of years. And anyone who knows those kind of publications knows they're pretty notorious as being quite a full-on place to work. They're kind of top of their game. They're big news publications, but again, a very intense kind of situation where definitely no one cared about your feelings when there was a big story about to break. So that's like now I've done a bit more self-help work, I can see that I've made a lot of choices that kind of put me in situations like that. But so I kind of grew up in the Northwest, studied business, thought I was going to do, my mum and my dad always had their own businesses, so I very much grew up thinking that's what I was going to be doing. Graduated from Manchester, got the job in the big business, moved to London, very quickly realised it wasn't really what I wanted to be doing or should be doing. I mean, I've always loved writing and reading, and I think I didn't really know that that was maybe an option of a job. So when I was like living in London and doing the corporate stuff, just was not fulfilling me in any way. And I was watching a lot of Sex and the City at the time. I think I just wanted to be Carrie Bradshaw, basically. So, so I think when I was about 23, 24, I jacked my job in. Well, I just left my job and I moved to New York, as Carrie Bradshaw would do. And I went there and I enrolled in NYU and studied journalism by night. And then that day I was just kind of interning at Forbes, New York Post and places like that. So I did that for a little while, which kind of looking back, it was obviously kind of a big jump to make and a bit of a risk, but leaving the safe job. But I just knew it wasn't what I was supposed to be doing. So I started writing and getting paid for it and loved it. And then I came back, got a job with The Sun, starting as a sub-editor on the features team, working under Dominic and the kind of bizarre showbiz guys. And then I noticed that the fashion team had like way more fun. I got to like wear all the amazing clothes and go to the parties. So kind of made friends with Erica Davis, who's now quite a big influencer. So she was my boss, actually. She gave me my first big break, I suppose, in journalism. So started working in the fashion cupboard. And by the time I left, I was fashion editor at The Sun. That was about 10 years later. Then moved to the Mail Online because I wanted to learn about digital, really. And this was about 5 years ago, when Mail Online was really just taking off and turning into the beast that it is now. So I learned a lot. It was really intense. It was kind of 12-hour days, getting it to your desk at 7 a.m., leaving 7 p.m., 8 p.m. sometimes, not moving that much, definitely no self-care there. I learned a lot about, and I wrote a lot, and I learned a lot about kind of maybe what I didn't want to do. So I kind of very much had that feeling then more than ever of like, what am I doing? It's not making me happy, and feeling like I was in quite a toxic environment, you know, maybe not writing stuff that I loved, maybe not working with people whose values were the same as mine. So eventually I kind of just got to the point where I'm really lucky. My husband was just like, just leave. And it was almost like permission. Someone just gave me permission to do something that just, we didn't know what I was going to do, but we just knew it would be better than doing a job I didn't love. So I kind of made the jump, and that, and then it took a while. Like, it's only, I mean, really just kind of finding my groove now. It takes a while, I think, when you've been in a full-on career and you think, you know, success is the next job up, and, you know, promotion, and that's progression. And when you're used to being in an environment with deadlines and pressure, and then you take yourself out of that environment, then suddenly I had a lot of time by myself. I was sitting at home freelance writing, and I'd never had that time. I'd actually made sure I didn't have that time by myself. So suddenly I'm kind of sitting there getting to know myself, I suppose, and I found it really hard. Yeah. So self-help was one of the things that really obviously helped me. It's one of the things I also did therapy, which really, it's the first time I've ever just sat down and talked about myself for an hour to someone. And I was really rubbish at it at first, and I used to spend most of the session asking about the therapist's weekend and her kids and what was happening. But that, with the self-help, and I also started going to a few support groups. Like, I went to something called Al-Anon, which is for anyone that kind of has someone in their family or friendship circle who's got a difficult relationship with alcohol. And I think my dad's like alcohol addiction really affected me. So, and I didn't really ever give myself time to process that. So sitting there in those groups, I didn't even really say anything, but I just realized there was a real magic in like bringing people together and helping people understand that they're not by themselves, and what they think they're going through alone quite often. Well, most of the time you're not ever alone. Someone else feels the same or has felt the same. So what I wanted to do is self-help, is bring together the kind of elements of self-help from the books and the ideas and these new concepts that were kind of changing my life and my thoughts about the world and myself. And then also this kind of support network, because I feel like it's really magic to be able to do those things together. So yeah, that's the long-winded answer to why self-help, I suppose.
Amazing to be able to combine those two things together, because from the workshops that I do, people always come away with it, and the best thing they've come away with is knowing that they're not alone, and having that support from other people. And because there's so much shame with things, if you're struggling with anxiety or depression, or, you know, you're lonely because you're working alone or something, and actually you think we're the only ones like that, and almost everyone you speak to will understand some aspect of that. There's so many of those universal things that we feel so alone with, but actually they're, you know,
of course. And I think
normal.
when you think you've got all the answers, or you think, you know, just, and it go around your own head is the worst thing. This is what I've learning, you know. I call myself like a recovering undersharer, because I'm like, I'm really lucky. I've got a massive, brilliant group of friends. I've got a huge, messy, amazing family. And so I've always had loads of people around me, but I've always been the kind of listener and the one that kind of takes things in. So I think just now, even now, when I talk to some of my like best friends, the way I talk to them now is so different than a few years ago, because I'll actually tell them what I feel about something. And it took a while for them to get used to this, the new version of me that might say no to something, or might question things a bit more, or might just say, I feel crap today, and I just hadn't really done that before. So I think, yeah, like quite often with the groups or with workshops and things, sometimes it's not about being fixed, is it? It's about just someone listening to you and hearing you. And then also, meeting other people who sometimes you might be in a worse position than you, which actually helps put things in massive perspective, I think.
Yeah. I think it's such a powerful thing to be able to open up and to share things. Because I think I was the same as you for a long time. I really resonate with what you were saying about finding it difficult having therapy. I would literally claw at my legs because I was finding it so awkward to have to talk about myself.
The mortifying
just
kind of
the self-indulgence, and like, oh, I feel like I need to be asking about you. I can totally relate to that. But thankfully now, you know, it's second nature to be able to do that. But I've noticed as well, like with my friends, I'll ask them how they are, and it's so easy for it not to get to the deeper conversation where people are so used to saying, yeah, I'm fine, you know, oh, I'm just really busy, or this sort of thing. And actually we need to go deeper because there is so much going on, and it's much better to not keep it inside. Much
Absolutely. And these and the meetups, the Shelf Help meetups that I'm organising, and now I've got different people organising them for me. So we're doing a few different ones around the country on the same night, which is brilliant because people come to one and then really see the magic of it. But it, that the meetups kind of, as well as the support group element, it's because I was really noticing that I was going out with friends, like people who I love and who I want to see, who I might not have seen for a while. And we'd all just get like way too overexcited, drink loads of white wine, not talk about anything really that mattered, like maybe moan about work a bit. And then you come away kind of, you know, while I'm reading all these books and learning all these things, and I've got friends who are in a similar situation to me, as in they're kind of more, they're interested in learning about themselves, but we never kind of gave ourselves time to talk about it. So you're there with your best friends and kind of sometimes coming away feeling a bit like dissatisfied or like you don't really know what's going on in their life. So what I try and do at the meetups is kind of really foster just a sense of, you can just come and just talk about the big stuff, really. It's like, so straight away we kind of like the book of the month can be about anything. Like we covered your amazing book, and so that is about anxiety. And so bringing a group of people together who don't really know each other to talk about anxiety, even the fact they're in the room is a big deal for most of them. So it's kind of, but the people there, they take so much away from it, even if they're not talking that much, just listening and hearing other people's stories, I think is kind of, it's just really, really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. And just on the topic of self-help itself, what has surprised you most about self-help books?
I think I'm constantly surprised because I'm a self-help geek now, as I know you are.
Well, you can see my self-help library.
I know, I love it. I'm jealous. But I'm kind of constantly surprised by how a few words can kind of blow your mind or totally change the way you see something. And I think some people say, I can't believe you read a whole, you know, you're studying a new self-help book every month in this book club, it's too much for me. But it's like, if you only take one thing away from a book that could make your life better, to me that's just like amazing. And I think, yeah, sometimes I'll just, you listen to the right person at the right time. Like, I don't know if you do this, Chloe, but I've definitely gone to books and I wasn't ready for them, like Tony Robbins, Unleash the Giant Within, The Power of Now. They're both books that maybe I started reading 6, 7, 8 years ago thinking, I should read these. I know I should, but I wasn't ready to kind of like receive the messages in them almost. It's like when you're kind of listening to a friend giving you advice and you know the advice is right, but you don't really want to hear it. So I think I'm amazed that now I can go back to those books and take something totally different. And like when I listened to Brené Brown's TED talk the first time about, she talks a lot about shame and vulnerability. And when it literally blew my mind. And I think I'm amazed that all this stuff is out there and I didn't know it before. And now I'm just so hungry to get it all. And I'm also surprised by how I think the reason Shelf Help has been so successful is because it's so broad and there's so many different people are interested in this topic. Like I said earlier, self-help is so, and self-development is very broad. Like I went to another book club last night actually called Rebel Book Club, and they're all about non-fiction and self-development, but maybe more on a kind of productivity side of things. And we did a book called Atomic Habits, which is all about how to make small changes to your habits and how that will kind of improve your life. And the people around the table last night, they were so different. There was a gaming guy, there was some bankers, there's me, there's some creatives, and everyone is talking about a habit that they want to change, all completely different and for different reasons. And the advice that we were all able to give and share, I just find that amazing, that you kind of, that it's so broad, yet like as you said earlier, it's so universal. Like we all want to be better, don't we? We all want to know, understand ourselves more, or be more caring to our friends, or kind of, yeah, like I think that the themes are quite universal in self-help, but I have been surprised by how broad the appeal is actually.
Yeah, I feel like almost the word self-help has in the past been almost like a, I don't want to say like a dirty word, but I don't know what you think about this, almost like it wasn't cool, but now it's cool to be into self-help again. I don't know if that's just my perspective because I'm in that world and it's like,
yeah, well, totally. It's kind of, it used to be super naff, didn't it? Mm. And still, I remember when I first started Shelf Help, because I mean, I worked for The Sun and then The Mail, so I love a pun. So it's like, that to me is just the dream.
Yeah.
And a yogi friend of mine, like a quite hippie yogi, was like, don't say self-help, it's so naff now, you say self-development. But I was like, it's not that catchy, is it? Yeah. So for me, self-help works better anyway. But I think, yeah, now, I mean, we're doing the book of the month for January was a Paul McKenna book, and it's called You Can Change Your Life in 7 Days. And at the meetup this week, one of the girls came And she had she'd covered it in brown paper. She just said, I don't want to be sitting on the tube and everyone thinking, what do you need to change about your life? She said, but I kind of feel like we all want to be better, don't we? But I did. She wasn't ready to kind of like make that announcement, like on the district line, that she was changing her life. So yeah. I think there's definitely more conversations around it. It's kind of, I mean, like life hacks, you know, like people like Tim Ferriss or some of the kind of, I don't know, you know, Seth Godin, these kind of guys that are blogging and writing these amazing books, and they're using very non-flowery speak. Like, you know, they're kind of, it's all for them. It's all about getting more out of your day, getting more out of your body, getting more out of your life, isn't it? So I think there's that side of things. I mean, there's still some really kind of brilliantly naff stuff out there as well, isn't there? So, I mean, I used to be really bad at, like, if I started a book, I would finish it. But now, because I'm reading lots of different things, if I start a book and it's just like, it's too fluffy or it's too self-helpy, then I'll just be like moving on.
Yeah. I had a lot of comments on the reviews in my books are, you know, it's not like a normal self-help book. You know, this is not like a normal self-help book, because I think people have that idea, maybe an old-fashioned idea of what self-help books are, but actually there are so many amazing ones out there that...
Yeah, and do you take that as a compliment when they say...
Well, I don't know. I don't know whether to take it as a compliment or not. I'm like, it is self-help, but anyway. can we talk about book clubs as well? Because I suppose, I don't know, is that another topic that has become very cool again? That maybe 5 years ago people wouldn't have been a cool thing to do in London on a Friday night. Like,
it was something for your mum, wasn't it, maybe before?
Yeah.
And I think there's lots of research around that millennials are actually really digging like book clubs, knitting clubs. I've got a friend, one of our shelf help hosts actually works for Nike, and they have sewing club now. And it's because people are craving this kind of like a chance to just not be looking at their phone and to disconnect from technology, but to connect with each other. And so book clubs, anything. And when you're getting anything, you're getting together in a group and being creative, that's a really good way to do that. And so committing to time to doing that is good. And there's also like the accountability level, isn't there? So, I mean, with Shelf Help, we kind of say we're a nearly easygoing book club because we just want you to come and benefit from the topics. And I'm really learning that different generations will take in information in a totally different way. Like, we've got some people that come to book club and won't have read the book, but they'll have listened to the podcasts from the author, or they'll have watched YouTube, or they'll be kind of learning around the topic and they just really want to talk about it. But still, that accountability of having a group to come to every month or however often you do it is really, I think, is really helpful to people. It's really helpful to me. Like, it makes me accountable. I have this whole community now, that so I have to be making sure I'm reading the books and only recommending things that I think, you know, are really helpful. And I think also the way that we can share information now, it's like we have WhatsApp groups going on for our different, some of our different meetups. We've got the Facebook group, we've got Instagram where you can share the quotes. So there's like being part of a club has never been easier, really, has it? Like, that's, I know technology is like, there's downsides to it, but it's also amazing and like brilliant that you can find your tribe and you can find other weirdos like you everywhere and then kind of come together. And then again, that's going back to like not feeling so alone, but also it's really inspiring, isn't it? It's so inspiring for me to sit in a group of people who've read the book or been interested in a book about, say it was your book about anxiety. Everyone that's there is showing an interest in making their lives different and better. So that being surrounded by other people like that can only do good things, can't it?
Absolutely. I suppose so many people are lonely, and we're so overconnected on social media, and yet there's some crazy statistic like 50% of 16 to 24 year olds feel lonely a lot of the time or something.
Yeah.
And I think we need that real connection, and not just the connection that's sort of superficial, actually going to that deeper level and meeting people that are like-minded. And so, yeah, I think we do need to get out and connect and go to book clubs. And I love that idea of accountability as well, because it is all too easy to have a book and to not finish it. And a lot of people tell me maybe they have anxiety and actually it affects their attention span, so they can't sit down and read a book. So maybe it's about listening on Audible, or maybe it's just having that accountability that means you're more motivated, more inspired to actually read it and that sort of thing.
And I think sharing ideas and sharing thoughts on something is it just makes it even more powerful, doesn't it? So even if you don't agree with the author, or even if you don't agree with some of the concepts in it, the fact that you can go and talk to someone who's as interested as you is just going to I think it's just going to make it more powerful and more impactful on your life, for sure.
Yeah. What about your favourite self-help books? What have been some of your favourites and why?
I have a little pile here for you.
Oh, good, good, good.
I was like, I don't know how to choose one. I've got, so I'm going to talk about a few maybe. The Miracle Morning, do you know this one?
I've heard of it, I haven't read it. I need to read this.
This is a life changer. I think this has been one of the favourites actually of book club, because it's all about, I mean, it's quite a lot about habits. So yeah, the 6 habits that will transform your life before 8 a.m. So anyone who says they're not a morning person will obviously just recoil at that. But it's literally, this is one that kind of changed my life for sure. So he talks about savers. This is the author, Hal Elrod, he talks about savers, which are 6 habits to get into in the morning. So you're kind of starting your day in the right way, which I totally believe that going into the day in a positive kind of frame of mind, feeling like productive before you've even kind of started, you know, your day's work, is such a way to have a better life, basically. So here's the 6 habits. They're called the savers. So you've got S for silence, A for affirmations, V for visualization, E for exercise, R for reading, and S for scribbling. So it's kind of like, the idea is you do 10 minutes of each of those things, kind of before your breakfast almost, and then the compound effect of doing those things is that you get into these habits of just framing your day, well, starting your day in this really positive, amazing way. So that's one.
Brilliant.
Kindness Method was one of our mutual friends, Shiru Izadi. Well, now friend. I basically read the book, loved it, stalked her, made her my friend. But we covered this in book club, I think, in August last year. And this is, again, kind of about habit change. And it's about changing, but mostly it's about changing your relationship with yourself. And it's about how being kind to yourself, it can change everything, which I totally believe now. I mean, one of the main things that's changed for me with self-help is that I actually kind of like myself now, whereas before I just didn't. I never gave myself time to think about stuff like that. Whereas this book, it really kind of takes you back to look at your relationship with yourself before you try to start make any changes. Because if you're kind of feeling proud of yourself and positive, you're more likely to want to do good things for yourself. So that one I would absolutely recommend. And then 2 more that I've got here, The Untethered Soul, which I'm sure you know, not too long, but basically another game changer, really kind of anyone who's looking to get a bit more spiritual, I would really recommend this too. It talks about the kind of the voice in your head and who is it, and you know, how you talk to yourself. Like, we all have that voice in our head that's maybe not so nice sometimes. So it's kind of like, I think he kind of likens that voice to like the annoying roommates. So if somebody's annoying you, you just don't listen to them, or you move yourself away from them. But when it's in your head, then you have to kind of train yourself to stop listening to it, or at least to kind of be aware sometimes of that critic, and realizing you don't need to listen to everything it says, or you don't need to behave according to the kind of inner critic. And then the last one I just wanted to tell you about or show you is this one, Thirst. Don't know if you've heard of it.
Oh, I haven't heard of that.
So Scott, I love this one because Scott Harrison is, he's now the CEO of Charity Water. So he's doing amazing things, but he was a New York club promoter for 10 years. And he lived this, like, I think it's like in the 90s into the noughties in New York. He basically just got models and rich people into clubs. He lived like the most hedonistic drink, drugs, girls, parties, that kind of life. And then he woke up one day and suddenly was like, what am I doing? And had a total about switch and started working for charities. But then what he's now done is he started his own charity, but he's used his skill set from being this incredible event planner and organizer and connected person to create a different kind of charity. Like, he's the guy that kind of invented the give your birthday money to charity quite a few years ago. And he basically kind of remarketed charity in a way to make people enjoy giving and to make it seem like a cool thing to do. So he was using all of his kind of skill set as New York's premier club promoter to now do good in the world. So I kind of feel like I'm not a club promoter, but I feel like I was this person then, I want to be this person now. But actually, at what I'm doing with self-help is using all the skills that I've gained over my life as, you know, journalist, creating content, interviewing people, organizing photo shoots, organizing events. I'm pulling all that together now to hopefully make content make something that's a lot more valuable and that people can really get a lot from. So I think I quite relate to him and his story for that reason. So that's some of my favorites.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for sharing that. definitely a couple there that I'm going to be adding to my Audible listen list. Just in terms of I'm sure there's probably a lot of these things for you, but have there been some other big changes that you've made in your life as a result of reading self-help books?
I think it's mostly it's actually probably mostly quite small practices that are adding up. The biggest change is how I feel about myself, that's for sure. But then that feeds into choices I make. So I haven't made any, haven't moved house or totally changed jobs or whatever. But I think there's definitely small changes in my behaviour. So I do my miracle morning when I can. So I'm trying to meditate. I'm trying to journal. I'm trying to do more things that I know are good for me. So getting a self-care routine. I don't watch the news at all anymore. So from going a couple of years ago, I lived the news. So I used to be at my desk at 7 a.m. and by that time I should have caught up on the news from the world, the previous night. And then I'd be in a newsroom for 12 hours. So it was just constant. And I thought that was the best way to be educated and be on top of things. And now I don't listen to the news and it makes me so much happier. And I just I'll find out about stuff I need to find out about. Social media is amazing for that. Obviously, I talk to people. I read some stats some information saying that if you're consuming news all the time, A, it's got a really negative bias because that's the nature of news. It's sensational. It's bad news. It makes the news. But also, if you're not actually able to do anything about it, it doesn't make you feel any better. So hearing all the stuff that's going on in the world, yeah, it's good to be educated and informed. But unless you're then deciding to go and make a difference to the problems that you're reading about a lot or that are particularly upsetting you, then actually all it's going to do is upset you, bring your bring your energy down, make you feel low. And that's no good to anybody. So I think making sure for me now is I'm quite a bit more protective of myself, protective of what I'm putting into my body, as in what I'm eating. I'm I haven't been drinking for a while, for about 4 months. In fact, I think I've drank twice, but I did the 100-day reset after a book I read called Sober Curious. And so that's that has become as a result of just liking myself a bit more. So being more careful, and I'm more careful, about the news I consume or the media I consume, more careful about the people I hang out with and the things I say yes to. Like I said earlier, I'll say no to stuff more now, or I'll actually, before I commit to something, know that I really want to do it. So as before, I used to overcommit to everything, but that wasn't the nature of just trying to be just busy all the time, because being busy is better than just being quiet. Whereas now I'm I need a bit of both,
Yeah. Yeah. So powerful. I think that idea about not watching the news for most of us, we don't need to watch it and it doesn't have a beneficial effect and it brings us down and it doesn't make us better people. So
I mean, I was in the States recently and just what in the airport, just watching, because it's there everywhere, isn't it? So we have to be really careful, online with social media, even everywhere we are, there's inputs all the time, isn't there? So it's I think it's up to us to set the boundaries. But just watching, seeing at the sports bars, all the the blaring, it's so in your face, and it's nothing positive. So imagine, so if you're choosing to have that in your head all day over then you don't have any time to to hear yourself, or also to think about the good stuff that's happening, because there is loads of good stuff happening and there's lots of amazing people out there and there's loads of amazing things to get involved in. But it's just being careful, isn't it, about what you're taking in, I suppose.
Totally. In terms of not drinking then, how has that impacted you? What have you noticed about that experience?
It's really amazing, actually. Because I've done it before. I used to have this blog called Detox Retox, which is still how I live my life a bit. But it used to be very much 50%, 50%, and I used to detox and then really retox. So maybe I'd have. I mean, I think I can have quite good willpower, like we all can, when we really focus on something. So I've done Dry Jan for, or Sober October, or a month here and there. But at the end of the month, I would always be desperate waiting for that last day to then celebrate all that good work with the big night on the booze. So doing the 100 days, which is just over 3 months, was a real game changer, because suddenly it went from not just eking out a month thinking I can do this, because everyone, you can do anything for a month, can't you, to I don't drink now. So it's just taken out the equation, which means you're not spending the time thinking, you know, what should I drink instead? It's just maybe you'll make different decisions about the events that you say yes and no to. And but yeah, I mean, I think in the book Sober Curious that I talked about, Ruby talks about FOMA, which is like fear of missing alcohol. And I used to be like a massive like FOMO addict anyway, so fear of missing alcohol. And it's like, I mean, I think you're not drinking either, are you? And it's, I think for sometimes it's the idea of it that's worse. I mean, I did it over Christmas and New Year, as did you. And I went to some amazing parties and people would be talking to me at the party and saying, well, how are you going to do it at Christmas? And I was like, well, I'm doing it. I'm here, I'm having a nice time. I'm like, I'm talking to people I love. And so I really enjoy getting the mornings back. That's most of it. And also the feeling of not wasting time. I think before I used Friday night was always the big night out because the week had been so intense at work and so stressful. So that'd be your big blowout. And then the Sunday night blues would sometimes start Saturday morning. So that's no way to live your life, is it? Work Monday to Friday just to live for Friday and then feel rubbish until Monday. So I'm loving weekends. I feel like they're like double the length and I'm just getting more done. And I just feel really good for it. I mean, how do you find it?
Good, yeah. I'm feeling more inspired just hearing you say that. I'm feeling like, yes, I made the right decision.
Yeah, I think you need to find, like I wrote a piece and it was like, you know, how to do it. Or how to do it if, because I think it's for some people it's easy, isn't it, to stop drinking or to stop certain habits because it wasn't a big part of their life. But for me, for lots of people I know, it's socialising around the bar or around parties or whatever is a big part of our lives. So I think what I've learned is don't just take that away totally. So before, when I've maybe done a month off, I've kind of sat at home alone moaning and thinking this is rubbish not drinking because it's boring. But it's like that's just I was making boring choices. So now I'm kind of like, yeah, in the piece I wrote I would talk about find your tribe. It's like I'm making an effort to hang out with people more who drink less. And it's like, and actually that makes sense because then the pressure's off, isn't it? It's not about, that's not what the night's about, or it's not someone asking you 10 times, why aren't you drinking? How do you feel about it? Because people are really interested. I don't know if you've noticed this, like even people who are drinking around you will really want to know why you're doing it and how you're doing it. Like some people have said to me, you're so lucky you can go out and not drink. And I'm like, it's not lucky, it's just a choice. Like we've all got the same choice. And I just haven't made that choice for a long time because for different reasons, you know, it's like it's a coping mechanism, isn't it? It's a self-medication and it can be really fun, but there's ways to have a lot of fun, you know, without it. Like we're on Friday, so we're going to go, our Friday date is going to the Transformational Breath Workshop, which is like old me would not be doing that on a Friday, but I'm actually really looking forward to it and really think I really like need that. That's like the best way I could spend my Friday now.
You've got to get your thrills somehow. So
yeah,
gonna go
exactly. That's
work.
The thing, I think. You don't change as a person, do you? You're just changing. You're making different choices. And that book is really interesting because it talks about just like why we think booze is so fun. Because we do, you know, we use it to celebrate anything. But for me, like celebrate it's Friday. Or, like I said, I went to the States recently. I did a long haul flight and I didn't drink anything, which is the first time in like as a grown-up going on a flight probably, and I felt so much better. Like my jet lag obviously was better, just like I arrived in a new country feeling good, not feeling kind of like hungover. And it was a real, like, it's like suddenly like, wow, why haven't I done this before?
Yeah, I think it's got to be about embracing the lifestyle and embracing it rather than thinking it's something you've got to get through. But yeah, totally.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally agree with that. Yeah, it makes a big difference with jet lag actually. Just come to think of it. Yeah, I had that experience when I went away last year.
Yeah, interesting. Such a big difference. And also, I mean, the thing is, though, I don't want to not hang out with my friends who I really love and who I have a lot of fun with. Like, I still want to go, I'm still been going to gigs and, you know, I just can't last past 2 a.m. now. So it's kind of finding out ways to do things that are, like, I'm not saying I want to totally move away from what I was doing before, but it's just kind of, yeah, having the different choices, I suppose.
Brilliant. Can you share, is there anything that you're struggling with at the moment, and if so, how are you overcoming it?
Well, I think, like I talked before about being an undersharer, like what I struggle with now is, before I used to be like, well, no one's interested in what I've got to say, so it's fine, I just won't say anything. Whereas now, because through my own actions, I've created this community and I've created a big interest. So suddenly people are more interested in what I have to say, which is amazing. And I think I've got some good stuff to say, but I find it quite difficult sometimes to kind of get the message across in the way that that I want to. So I think just expressing myself generally and telling my story maybe, and also representing the idea of self-help and what it is as well as I can. I find that's my kind of struggle. That's my when I at the beginning of the year, when I'm kind of like, what does this year, what do I want it to do? Like, what's my, not resolution, but what's my focus? And it really is to kind of maybe like get to the bottom of my story and be able to share it, and also to be able to stand up in front of a group of hundreds of people and tell them what's in here. So I mean, I know that's a little bit of technique and training, isn't it, and confidence, which you can probably help me with your hypnotherapy. But so I'm reading a lot about there's a transformational speaking coach called Gail Larson. I don't know if you've heard of her.
Oh yeah, I've got her book.
But have you? Yeah, so I've been listening to that when I was away. And she's amazing, and it's all about talking from the heart. She's like, don't worry about making the eye contact, or it's not about the techniques. But she's taught like Gabby Bernstein, Rebecca Campbell, Light is the New Black, and then also Ruby Warrington has been to her course. And these are the three women that I really look at and see them doing this amazing work. And I think I wish I could be more like them. So I think that's something that I'm kind of getting over slowly but surely. Because it's important, because that's the thing. It's kind of, I almost need to kind of get out my own way to do it justice. So that makes sense.
Yeah. I think there's something so vulnerable about putting yourself out there in front of other people. It's all of us fear judgment. Every single person, even confident people, deep down, it's a survival mechanism that we want to be accepted and we want to be liked. And it is a vulnerable thing to share your story and to share your ideas and
It's
valuable for people to
and it's
able
totally
to
me I think it's because it's totally me, it's totally my thing now. And well, obviously your story is always you, but I've worked for big names, like big titles. So when I first went freelance, people would say, you'd go to an event and people would say, oh, where are you from? And I'd be like, oh, from Chiswick. But they don't mean that. They want to know, are you from, like, which newspaper you're from, which magazine you're from, which company are you representing? So suddenly when you're on your own, and also you're going out there, and it's kind of, I'm asking people to come and share with me, so I need to be able to share back, right?
Yeah, totally. And I think, I suppose, connecting to why you're doing that is such a powerful thing. I know it is for me, just to, because I have felt massive, vulnerability sharing the things that I never thought I'd tell anyone. I never thought when I was having panic attacks that I'd one day talk about my panic attacks with, a couple of hundred people. But knowing
and
that
be able
actually
to help them because of it.
Exactly, yeah. So knowing actually you saying that is helping someone else, or it's helping them to speak up and tell someone or get help, or know that it's okay to have therapy or read a self-help book. There's no shame in doing that. Such a powerful thing. So keep going.
Thank you.
Yeah, doing amazing.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for this conversation. I've absolutely loved it. So intriguing and helpful. Can you tell us where people can find out more about you and your book club and that sort of thing?
We've got a website, which is shelfhelp, www.shelfhelp.club. And then also we're on Instagram and we're on Facebook, Shelf Help Club. I'd love you to come and meet us and meet up. We're kind of like, we're looking for hosts so we can start more meetups in more areas. That's for me, that's the real magic of it. And we're organizing more events, also kind of working on connecting people with these experts and therapists and coaches and healers, because I'm really, the part of my website that's the busiest is always the events page. And what I'm really kind of getting a lot of messages about is people wanting help and not kind of knowing which way to go, because obviously a book is, for a lot of people, it's just the start. So yeah, I'd love you to get in touch with us that way. And then we just want to be like kind of growing the community, so you don't need to necessarily be reading the book to feel like you're involved. There's some brilliant, we've got a closed Facebook group which you can just apply to join. It's kind of easy, just let us know like what you like to read and stuff like that. But then quite often people will just say, recently there was somebody asking for recommendations on books on loneliness, and there's like about 15 messages of support from people who've been in the same position, and then offering, read this, watch this, talk to this person. So that's a great starting place, I think, to come to the Facebook page.
Yeah, it's such a supportive group, the Facebook page, and really active.
Oh,
and
yeah, you're in it, aren't you?
Check it out, everyone. Check it out. Amazing. I will put all these links in the show notes. Thanks so much for talking to me, Tony.
And thank
I'll see
Thanks
you later.
For having me.
We're hanging
thank
out later
you.
Today. So thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So I hope you enjoyed this episode with Tony Jones from Shelf Help Book Club. Thank you so much for listening. Please let me know what you thought of this episode. Come and find me on Instagram. I'm at Chloe Brotheridge. And I'd love it if you have a friend who you think would benefit from this podcast or this episode in particular. Take a little screen grab, text it to them, email it to them, tell your friends. Please help me to spread the word about how we can all become our calmest and happiest selves. Just another reminder that you can get a free anxiety busting toolkit if you head over to my website, calmeryou.com/free. And I'll send you some amazing resources, worksheets, affirmation MP3s, meditations, and it's all completely free. You just head over to calmeryou.com/free.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.